Hello, everybody. I'm Dwayne Mancini, and welcome to another episode of the Project MedTech Podcast. If you need anything from us or would like to suggest a future guest, you can email us at info@projectmedtech.com. If you enjoy this podcast, please subscribe and leave a review, and you can always visit our website, www.projectmedtech.com, or follow us on LinkedIn. If you're enjoying this content, don't forget to check out our other podcasts by searching MedTech Money on your favorite podcast platform or by heading to our website. MedTech Money is an interview-style podcast focused on demystifying raising and investing capital for MedTech startups. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Galen Data. Galen Data is the cloud for medical device makers. The Galen Cloud provides a configurable platform for device-to-cloud connectivity that is compliant to FDA, HIPAA, and CE mark standards. Built on 40-plus years of collective experience developing compliant systems in the medical device industry, the company's goal is to make medical device cloud connectivity available to all at a fraction of the cost while shaving months off the development timeline. In this episode, our guest, Brock Leonardi from PrescribeFit and I discuss his journey to leading PrescribeFit, his serial entrepreneur mentality, what they are actually working on at PrescribeFit, what they have learned during their early commercialization phase, remote patient monitoring codes, the importance of culture within a startup company, and so much more. So without further ado, my discussion with Brock Leonardi.
Thanks, Wayne.
So this is my first in-person podcast in 110 episodes of Project MedTech, and another 100 of MedTech Money have been recorded at this point. And because we started this during COVID, we've never done any of these in person. Now, previously, I had a podcast for 3 episodes, and I did 2 of those in person. And I forgot how much better it is when it's organic and it's in person rather than via video.
Absolutely,
so yeah. This is really exciting. So for those who, because no one knows where we are because they can't see us, we're in Columbus, Ohio. We're in a industrial building that PrescribeFit, you started here, correct?
That's right.
And you've slowly taken over like a large portion of this building with office space. So let's start here with a brief introduction to who you are and what PrescribeFit does.
Sure. Thank you. Yeah, and welcome. Welcome to our space. So this was 400 West Rich, and that's the building name of it here. So when we moved in, there was a co-working space in here. And actually, I met a couple friends that are lifelong friends in this building. So it's kind of cool.
Yeah.
And we started off in my office, now personal office, was our whole office, which was fit for about 4 people, and that's it.
No kidding. And this is 2018.
Cool. 2018.
That's when PrescribeFit started.
It officially started 2017.
Okay.
But that was the coffee shop year.
Okay. Yeah.
So if you need the best coffee, I can tell you where to go.
Yeah. I get that. Yeah. I get that. Okay.
All right. So yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah.
Brock Leonardi, co-founder and CEO of PrescribeFit. I've been here in the Columbus, Ohio area for 18 years from the West Akron area, and I graduated from Norton High School, came down here for OSU.
Yeah.
And I really didn't know what I wanted to do at the time, except I knew I wanted to be in the CIA. So okay. I started off with a Arabic and political science major. And I joked that I didn't want it to do because it was one job and one company. Yeah. But then I quickly realized that, oh man, I'm dedicating my life to this one role. So I'm going to, I thought I need to rethink what I'm doing and how much time I'm putting into this. I had always enjoyed entrepreneurship and just founding businesses, doing different things, trying to solve different problems. So when I realized that the CIA probably wasn't the right move to make, I switched majors and graduated with a strategic communications degree.
Okay.
And during the time that I was at OSU, it took me a little bit longer to get through to graduation because I had started some businesses at the time. So there were a couple quarters that I had to take off at the time. They were on quarters, not semesters.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. So, as I went through that, I did, worked with a company and did marketing and advertising. I had done, after that, I sold the client base from that and started a home care, home health agency. And we were private duty and also a Medicare and Medicaid certified. Mm-hmm. And we accepted insurance in that way. And then quickly realized that there were some issues with staffing. I mean, that was our differentiator, but it also was our biggest thorn in the side too, mm-hmm. is trying to find the best staff. So I thought, well, we can go and we could try all these different things, but why don't we just train them? And we'll just train, you know, average people on the street in a job-ready program, mm-hmm. and then we'll pick the best of the class and hire them in the agency. And it actually turned out that was the top business there. So it was called LaRock Healthcare Academy. And okay. for about 3 years, I'd built a four-campus career college that still stands today, and they're expanding now. Graduate thousands of students a month, or a year, excuse me.
Okay.
And yeah. And then in 2013, I sold that, stay on for a couple of years, and then kind of Prescribed Fit came about.
No kidding. Point. So you've always been a kind of a serial entrepreneur.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
You could say that.
Yeah. So is this, you know, like one of the questions I always have for serial entrepreneurs is obviously like a lot of people see problems, mm-hmm. but then there's a difference between seeing a problem and then saying, hey, you know what? I think I can solve that. Mm-hmm. Right. Is that something just you've always been like that? Or is that something that you've kind of progressed towards?
There's probably a little bit of crazy and a little bit of confidence and a little bit of no fear in there, right?
Yeah.
To get to that point. I can't say that I've always been that way, but especially when you're younger and you take, you know, riskier steps, especially you're trying to establish your life, your career, all of that.
Right.
You can do those things and then you get used to that as you get older. And now I wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah.
So it's just, that's what's naturally kind of built inside me.
Cool. So Prescribe Fit starts 2017. So you sold your company in 2013, you stayed on for a couple years. Mm-hmm. The idea of Prescribe Fit comes from where? I mean, take us through like the very beginnings of that, of you have this idea or you see this problem, you have this idea. You have co-founders, no co-founders. How do you build that team? You just talked about the coffee shop years, right? So take me like up until that point.
Yeah, sure. Okay. So to kind of go back to where it started, the original idea wasn't my own. I was brought into it and hired as a consultant and then as CEO.
Okay.
And so this was 2017, about mid-year. There's a local physician in the Columbus area that really saw a problem with their patients, and that they were coming in and presenting, you know, with increased chronic conditions and other issues, and they're very fit and very, you know, health conscious themselves. So as they evaluated, you know, what to do, they'd said, hey, there's an initiative out there called Exercise is Medicine. And it means that you take daily doses of medication, right, to correct a problem. Well, this is daily doses of physical activity.
Yeah.
So, and then eventually you start to treat the root cause of the problem. And so when you know, they'd started that, there was a gym close to the office and a gym that is owned by the co-founder of mine, Tony Capuano.
Okay.
And the Grody family here. So they started Donato's Pizza, if you're familiar.
Oh, sure. Donato's. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So no affiliation with Donato's Pizza, right. But pizza and Prescribe Fit probably don't mix.
Yeah. What a circle there.
In moderation. Yeah. Yeah. But the physician said, hey, you know, can we establish a relationship? I'll send, you know, my patients that I see that need, you know, to access gym services to you. And then, you know, you would then just take them and, you know, help them get connected to a trainer and set them up with a membership. So that's where the spark started, right? Then it's like, okay, well, why isn't every physician focused on exercise and actually doing something about it? Instead of just saying, go exercise, tell them to go to the gym. There's your gym,
right?
This gym will help you and will solve, you know, some of the problems you have, whether it's just a fear of going there or those kind of things.
Yeah.
And so when they looked at that, then they said, okay, now we have a spark. We have this idea. Mm-hmm. We've established the problem. And that's when I came in. And because I had done what I did in the past, then it kind of naturally just fell into place that I would take over the CEO role.
Okay.
And we ultimately launched a product. We did our best. And oftentimes in a startup, it's never quite right the first time.
Yep.
So it was 2018, 2019, like 2019, really, at the beginning of the year, we were like, man, this is just not sticking. Like, every physician that we visited, we visit hundreds of them, they'd said, hey, this is a good idea, but there's, you know, XXX of problems here that, you know, we have and we can see that are going on.
Yeah.
And like, first of all, it's not billed to insurance and patients were, you know, really require things and almost expect things to be covered by insurance. And,
yeah.
you know, there wasn't a piece where they could kind of play into it and dabble into it. It was like, make the referral and then it's done. So we, you know, retracted all of our resources and said, okay, let's go back heads down and kind of reinvent this. And that's when PrescribeFit, as it's known today, came about. And that is my idea, but, you know, really paying homage to what it originally was too.
Yeah.
And we still encompass that as well.
So. Very cool. So yeah. it's interesting. I think sometimes startups there's this perception, especially like med tech, health tech, that, you know, if you have a startup, you have to be here by year two or three, mm-hmm. but that's always not realistic, right? Because there is so much change that happens once you start. You could do as much customer feedback as you want prior to starting the company mm-hmm. and the product. Regardless, things are probably still going to change, right? I know very few companies that went out with product A and was like, okay, we're here, we got it, and that was like their end game, right?
Yeah.
There's always some evolution of it. So it's kind of cool to hear you the story of, you start in 2017, you get to 2019, and you're like, yeah, we just haven't got it right just yet,
mm-hmm.
right? So at that point in time, how large is the company?
How large was it? We were probably, maybe 6 or 7 people strong.
Okay, yeah.
Large enough. We had a couple developers and a couple, you know, a salesperson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you had raised capital at that point?
We did.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. And so what was that, like a seed round at that point?
Yeah. We've kind of been in you know, that angel seed pre-series A area. Mm-hmm. We're in pre-series A right now.
Okay.
And that's still open. We're looking to close that soon. But
okay.
It was right in that
okay.
stage.
Okay. So I'll come back to a little bit of fundraising strategy as well, because I'd love to hear a little bit more on that. But so 2019, you start to make this pivot, is that right?
That's right.
Okay. And so what is that pivot? What's that look like? And maybe take us up to current day of the current growth you've seen.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's that look like? So we you know, in 2019, first of all, I'll go a little bit market and regulatory,
yeah.
you know, thing for you.
Yeah.
So in 2018, Medicare released these new CPT codes
yep.
that created the program or the opportunity of remote physiologic monitoring or mm-hmm. RPM, also known as remote patient monitoring.
Yep.
So we looked at those codes because that was probably the biggest problem that we had, is that the practice, you know, they're a business in and of itself, right? They want to generate revenue. This is a great revenue source, PrescribeFit is, for a practice,
yep.
a significant one. And the patient also needs the coverage of it through insurance.
Right.
So that was our biggest problem, was like to try to figure out how we're going to do what we want to do and what we know to do to solve the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and how it relates to the industry, heavily regulated industry. So it's
yeah.
sort of like using, you know, right brain, left brain, like trying to mix it together. And sometimes it doesn't work.
Yeah.
But this did.
Yep.
And so as we looked at that, we used the remote patient monitoring codes, and we say, okay, they were released in 2018. They kind of redesigned in 2019. And then in late year, we said, okay, we can use these to help fuel our service.
Right.
So what is our service? We at the time didn't know that we were in for orthopedics. But as of today, we are a virtual remote patient monitoring and lifestyle health solution for orthopedic practices and musculoskeletal patients.
Okay.
So so we said, okay, well, we'll dabble in pain management a little bit, and we'll dabble in, you know, in bariatrics, we'll go to orthopedics, we'll look at primary care, you know, and we were looking at mitigating the risk of chronic conditions that are developed through bad lifestyle health practices. Okay. In other words, lack of physical activity, high stress, dehydration, poor nutrition, you know, all those kind of things over time
yeah.
as you build that up. And we were looking at what's the best fit. So in 2020, we launched in a practice called GIS Orthopedics. So it's orthopedic practice. And it was right as the pandemic hit. So, of course, right?
Right.
So,
duh.
Yeah. Just like this is your first in-person episode.
Yeah. So, yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So, at that time, we'd enrolled one patient, but that, and then everything shut down.
Yeah.
Non-essential healthcare. And that one patient, over the next, you know, several months, did super well.
Okay.
While everyone was home drinking more and all of that, this patient was losing weight.
Yeah.
And he's still on our website today. He did a testimonial video, David Plummer. I can say his name.
Okay.
He's authorized that.
Yeah.
And then when it opened back up, we had started to accept a lot more patients.
Okay.
And truly what we're solving for is we put in two different pillars of focus for lifestyle health into our solution.
Okay.
Nutrition and physical activity.
Okay.
And then we have a whole slew of other things too that we help guide the patient on.
Yeah.
But it isn't really like a pillar, like a foundational
right.
Focus at the current time. And we, you know, we had a team of people that, you know, were set up to remotely monitor the patient and coach them every week, or as often as needed. And then we, you know, issued a device out to the patient and created a smartphone app that the device connects to. So
okay.
We're collecting the weight of this patient to kind of see what the effects of our program are. And we're looking at all the data and information as it comes in. And we realize that, you know, we are a program for obese patients of an orthopedic practice.
Yep.
Of which about 50% of all the patients there are obese in
okay.
a usual practice across the United States.
Okay.
Varies by state, but of
yeah.
course, you know, just
kind of. Right. General kind of statistics. Yep.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, you know, as of today, we, you know, then we had, you know, some great folks on board. Today, we just have a phenomenal team. Mm-hmm. As you saw in
yeah.
our other room,
that's awesome.
There's five new associates that started
yeah.
2 days ago.
Yeah.
And, or yesterday, what's today?
Yeah.
Tuesday. Yeah. So,
yeah.
We have a team of 40 now.
Yep.
Associates,
wow.
A whole leadership team of 9.
Yep.
And we're just preparing ourselves for growth across the nation. We have practices that are in, you know, different states.
Right.
We've really done a great job at acquiring most of the market in Ohio.
Yeah.
And we're just kind of working with the practices now on how we're going to break out in certain other areas.
Sure.
So it's really been a cool ride as we've been in to build this. But I think what the pandemic did, if I can just take 1 second more, is
absolutely
it allowed us, instead of focusing on just the growth, to really focus on the product. And even though it was with, you know, it wasn't just with one patient, because kind of when you open back up, everyone was still, you know, pieces of everything were a mess, right?
Yeah.
You were trying to figure out how to work with the team, how to COVID, you know, policies we're going to put into place, how do you do surgery when you have COVID, all those things, right? For
right.
several months afterwards. So the opportunity to grow and expand really was kind of capped for a short period of time, but we really looked at the product then, and it. I'll share some stats about our product at some, you know, some point. We,
yeah,
it's just amazing from a patient experience on what they're able to do.
Yeah, that's exciting. So, yeah. So you're, you know, when I look at like companies and how well they're going to be able to commercialize something. Mm-hmm. It's you go through the different check boxes, right? Okay, the end user, the patient, is it doing good for them? Obviously, mm-hmm. right? There's no question that that's your product is. Mm-hmm. Can doctors take advantage of it? Is it reimbursable, right? Who's going to pay for it? Do they really want to pay for it? So if I'm going through yours, right, a lot of your business case, I mean, obviously the patients benefit from this tremendously. The orthopedic practices benefited from, I'm guessing, from the sense that if their patients are healthier, then that means, hey, that knee replacement isn't as risky, or that hip replacement can happen, or things
absolutely.
Like that, right? And
yeah.
then from a RPM perspective, I mean, that kind of speaks for itself, right? I mean, reimbursement, I think for people who aren't in the U.S., it's a little different, mm-hmm. right? You know, it is complex here, but these RPMs have opened up so much for, and honestly, the RPM codes are good for patients as well, because mm-hmm. that's less trips into the doctor. It's less trips into the hospital.
No
I mean,
doubt.
These are awesome. So is there anything else from like that business sense, right? I mean, the RPM codes, the value to the orthopedic groups, the value to the patients. Is there anything else big I missed that you think from your side, hey, this is what really set us apart when we got to that spot in 2020?
Oh man, that's a good question, because you kind of hit on a lot of things.
Yeah, and it could be just those three.
No,
right?
I think you hit on a lot. I mean,
yeah.
we could go into detail about all of
yeah.
that and really what it means and the
yeah.
true the benefits and whatnot. But You know, it is a significant program that is something, and we call ourselves a treatment pathway. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we opened up that treatment pathway that orthopedic physicians or practitioners had been trying to solve for a long time. And there are practices that put in a registered dietitian, a team of them, or, you know, an athletic trainer in a gym, and they built a gym, you know, for patients to exercise in, not just to do PT.
Yeah.
And they would, you know, talk to them about weight loss and how important that is. And there's so many studies, and it's part of AAOS's guideline-based treatment for certain ailments. So there's been a lot of, you know, support there and desire to solve for this, but we hear every day no one has found the solution. And I mean that, and I'm not saying we talk to everybody out there, but I have yet to find a practice, and we've talked to quite a few, that has found that solution that has worked, you know, most of the time.
Right.
And which is a really cool thing. Is really, you know, for us to be able to then come in and say, hey, we did, and we really use a multi-factor process advantage, like where we've built out this service package around our software and hardware component and team to make it easy for a busy practice to put it in place. So we're kind of then taking what is there and just saying, hey, we can use that existing, you know, operational piece, and we work right within it. We're not trying to interrupt it either.
Right. Yep. That's a big one, especially in the U.S. healthcare system because of the complexities of it. Mm-hmm. Awesome. So I want to circle back to fundraising real quick. So you mentioned your seed round was somewhere between 2017, 2019, somewhere in there.
Seed round. Yep, that's right. It would be 2017 to 2018 was kind of like friends and family.
Okay.
In there, yeah. Or angel.
Yep. Yep. And then you're doing a pre-series A right now.
Yeah.
So from an investor standpoint, what has your strategy been? I think, you know, we talk to a lot of startups, and we have a whole podcast series dedicated to this, right? I mean, because there is no one way to raise capital. There's no one strategy of who you want to raise from, right? But those things do matter, right? A lot of people, depending on where you are, can get swayed into, hey, maybe, you know, we see a lot of companies like, oh, I pitched to 300 VCs. Okay. I mean, you know, that's not the reality for a lot of companies, right? They might spend some time at angels or spend some time at friends and family or family offices, right? And then we can have some more success there. So for you, when you were starting out raising capital as a CEO, how much thought did you give that? Did you say, hey, you know what? I'm going to do my best to raise from these people because this is who I want as an investor. I mean, did you give that a lot of thought at the beginning, or were you kind of like, oh, we need money, we got to just go raise it?
Mm-hmm. I have rarely been in the mindset that a check is where I want to find, or I want the funds to come from, just a check writer.
Yep.
We have a really good investor network, I will say.
Okay.
And it was built with a certain mindset and a certain strategy. And that strategy was a strategic investment is much more value rich than just any investment.
Yep.
And we have, you know, one VC is a part of this round that signed in, but they are in the medical space, so which is, you know, really great.
Right.
We've had other investors that have built significant unicorn companies around in Columbus that are, you know, nationally known, that have been acquired. We've had others. The exact number, probably 15. Let's just say 15.
Sure.
Might be give or take a few. I need to physicians or surgeons that are invested in the company.
Yep.
And a lot of those are orthopedic surgeons.
Yep.
And what we've done then is when we built the product and we were still kind of working through after the pivot, we utilized that relationship to kind of have a no barrier or low barrier entry into a practice environment and be able to build it with them in mind and with a busy practice environment in mind. So it wasn't just like we were sitting in our office and saying, let's go test and see if this works.
Right.
You know, they allowed us in there.
Right.
Like our own playground and sandbox.
Yeah.
So it was cool.
Yeah.
And that's always been the strategy.
Yeah. That's great. I mean, we talk about a theme on the podcast frequently, right? Anyone who listens a lot is probably sick of this at this point, but we talk about good money, neutral money, bad money. And we always say, like, neutral money, everyone thinks they're raising good money for the most part, right? But you just need to be careful because some of that good money can be masked as bad money, and that's the worst case scenario. And some of that good money masked as neutral money, it's not necessarily a bad thing, right? It's still money as long as they're not causing issues, right? So it's good that you've given that a lot of thought because we see a lot of companies, frankly, fail when it comes to this fundraising and who sure. they've taken in, who they give board seats to, you know, and it's a little bit of both, right? I mean, we talk about it with VCs frequently on where they're at in their fund, mm-hmm. the current fund they're in. So. Sure. Curious from your stance, how much due diligence did you do, right? Mm-hmm. We always talk about the due diligence process for you mm-hmm. as a startup when they're investing. How much did you do on the investors you were taking money on
yeah.
from?
That's a good question. So if there was a practicing physician, I think that's obvious, right? You can yeah. kind of see who they are.
Right.
And there's a lot of information out there about yeah. them.
That's straightforward.
But when you're looking at a VC, and we yeah. you know worked with the current VC that we have in place, Tamron Hill and Mark Sherry there, we, you know, fortunately, my president and COO here, Prescribe Fit, sure. has a relationship directly with Mark for okay. several years.
Yeah.
So we had that there. But even so, we'd contacted portfolio companies and, you know, the other CEOs or founders of them, and we'd went to lunch, and, you know, there's a lot. We invited them out to another, you know, kind of couple-hour meeting with yeah. the other founders, the other co-founders of mine, and it was a important process for us to make sure that they were the right person, they were the yeah. right company in the right environment and support system. And, you know, I think that they are.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Good. Yeah.
And so what is the strategy, heading into the pre-series A? Why call it a pre-series A? Mm-hmm. I'm curious on this because there is a lot with naming nomenclature of your rounds as well.
Yeah. You yeah. know, I've never been one to just overinflate and kind of go and say, okay, let's just go Series A.
Right.
We are, you know, at the point here soon where we'll be at a Series A and we'll be raising a significant amount then, because we definitely want to make sure that we capture as much of the market share as possible across the United States.
Yep.
Right now, we remain direct competitorless. There's some other companies that are trying to dabble in the space, but mm-hmm. They're doing it a little differently, or they're a little bit too wide of a product and
yep.
kind of, you know,
yeah.
We want to make sure that we land grab right away.
Yeah. So you're very targeted.
Yeah. So yeah. Why we called it pre-Series A? I don't. You're probably just not quite ready to say Series A.
Yeah. 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 No. It's great. I mean, yeah. we talk to so many entrepreneurs about the importance of, like, VCs, other investment groups. They have a lot of like screening processes, mm-hmm. right? And sometimes, you know, if you're like, hey, I'm raising a Series B, but it's a couple million dollars, that could like screen you out right away.
Yeah.
Right.
Sure.
And so I think it's super smart that you called it a pre-series A. We see pre-series A and we see seed plus quite a bit. Right.
Yeah.
And they're both the same thing.
Yeah.
anyway,
pre-series A sounds like half glass, half full.
Right. I like that.
Yeah.
I like that. And so the other one I had written down that I wanted to cover too is, the RPMs, right? Sure. So remote patient monitoring, like you said, you mentioned it, right? It really changed the industry a lot. It actually changed med tech as a whole because it started to add this like whole subclass of med tech. And actually we were just on a call on the way down here. So it's 2 o'clock. Well, it was 2 o'clock. But at 1:30, I'm talking to this person who's telling me that med tech is going to outgrow biotech in the next 10 or 15 years, right? And she's quoting all this literature and the way she's talking about it. And I don't need a lot to be pushed in that direction. I mean, I'm the CEO of Project MedTech, right? I'm obviously biased, right? I'm all in on MedTech. but I'm curious, you know, we talk about RPMs. Maybe walk through that process of how you utilized it. It obviously changed the company quite a bit. But I think the strategy of that is really important for companies who are looking at these codes and saying, well, hey, we want to take advantage of RPMs. I hear that comment a lot. We want to take advantage of it. It's great. Well, I still need to hear the strategy of how and why and where it gets you. So maybe walk through, you know, it came out, how did you evaluate it? How did you incorporate it into your business model? You know, all that kind of good strategic details, I guess.
Sure. Yeah. Good question. So one thing I'll start with is that I knew from the beginning, is that I never wanted to be what I will deem as an RPM software company.
Okay.
Which would mean that someone provides, you know, a software for general use in the RPM space and has a whole slew of devices that then in the software component can be programmed, you know, or provisioned for whichever type of ailment or, you know, monitoring that they want to do, mm-hmm. right? And there's nothing wrong with that kind of company. Yep. That's just not what we were looking to be.
Sure.
We wanted to be a company that had an influence on patient care, and it reported better patient outcomes directly through our programmatic fashion and way that we established ourselves in the treatment space. And whether that was, you know, whichever kind of, you know, specialty, pain or all the others we were evaluating, we chose orthopedics, you know, for a specific reason, mm-hmm. but that's kind of where we landed. So when looking at that, it was like, well, how do these codes relate to the type of service that we're trying to facilitate and relate to what we're trying to build? You know, so we're a lifestyle health company. We practice root cause medicine and for musculoskeletal patients. And we use the RPM codes to bill for right. our service. Because why? We're looking at an effect on weight. We know weight's a physiologic value. And we know that that is, you know, kind of where we needed to land. And we want to do some coaching with it. So there's some minutes in there that can be billed and reimbursed. And there's some setup that's needed. And it kind of just naturally, you know, mirrored our service.
Yeah.
Which was a great thing.
Yeah.
So when we looked at that, it was 2018 or 2019. I really knew it came out in 2018, but 2019, I think, is when they had the three codes out.
Okay.
From the one that they tested in 2018, which was not that great.
Yeah.
And as you know, right. it's just a test.
Yeah.
But it really then became apparent that they were heading in that direction. They being Medicare and RUC mm-hmm. and all of those that evaluate all this. And we had contacted some really great consultants in the industry that just interface and you know, butt up against Medicare. Mm-hmm. And they had said, hey, this is all going to be something that's further supported down the road. You know, they know they still need to test it. It's pretty apparent that this kind of service needs to come about. And there's going to be further support. And there has been, which is great. So when you talk about RPMs, you know, how I kind of look at it is if it's the top of the tree or the umbrella is remote patient monitoring, and then we have remote physiologic monitoring, and then we have remote therapeutic monitoring. Mm-hmm. And next year, remote therapeutic monitoring, knock on wood, from the you know, powers that be from Medicare,
gets
approved, it will allow us to facilitate a remote therapeutic monitoring service in the same way that we do remote physiologic monitoring, which is great. So it has now already been expanded, and some of those codes are specific to musculoskeletal patients.
Yeah.
So there's another component of this too that I went and reached out to one of the 12 individuals that had written the codes and evaluated how to write these codes. And it's really interesting to hear him talk about it and kind of, you know, what the general nature and insight was from all of the different resources that they had collected and kind of how they sat down around the table and said, okay, well, here's what we need to do and here's how we'll evaluate it. So
yeah,
it really became apparent that it was right for us.
Awesome. Yeah. So when I hear you talk about RPM and remote patient monitoring reimbursement codes, it's something that I tried to tell a lot of the startups we work with, mm-hmm. which is CPT codes is one thing, but true reimbursement is a three-legged stool, right? I mean, it's you also have to take into the fact of who's paying, it's being reimbursed, but why are they buying it? I mean, there's so much here. And so this guy I used to work with at NAMS, his name's Ed Black, he's retired now. He used to do all the reimbursement presentations when we were working together, and he'd always call it this three-legged stool. And he'd go into this whole big thing about how everyone thinks it's just CPT codes, but there's so much more. And what you just described reiterates that point is, yeah, there is this reimbursement code we take advantage of, mm-hmm. right? But there is so much more to it. So
sure.
I think that kind of background is super helpful. As you were talking, something kind of popped into my head a little bit too. So clinical data. Just released an episode. The day we're recording this, I just released episode 108 of the podcast. We covered the MDR in Europe, which is like a hot topic in med tech. It's you know, there's more clinical data needed, more clinical follow-up, that kind of thing. Which is like always interesting to me that companies somehow did not value clinical feedback if you have a product on the market in the US and whatnot. But for you, clinical data is probably everything. So I'd love to hear from you, you know, from the very beginning, was that kind of clinical feedback, that kind of clinical data, patient feedback, I mean, how important was that to the success of PrescribeFit and how you've got to where you are today?
Mm-hmm. It is very important for us. Okay. I mean, when you're calling yourself a treatment pathway, you have to be able to say, yeah, right. There's some good data to validate it.
Right.
Right. So it has always been. And we're not talking about just outcome data, which we would say is, right, remote physiologic monitoring. That physiologic data value is weight,
mm-hmm.
or data point is weight, right?
So, right.
Which we have a great Bluetooth scale that mm-hmm. is manufactured sitting right here.
Okay.
See?
Yeah.
You know, it's sent out to the patient. It collects the data wirelessly. It transmits it to our servers and our database and then shows it. But it's also participation data mm-hmm. too, because, right, in order to build the codes, the patient has to participate at a certain level.
Yeah.
Right, collecting their data 16 out of every 30 days, or participating in phone calls or some type of outreach, you know, synchronous or asynchronous communication activity. Mm-hmm. There's those components as well. And then, you know, we look at process data too. So we consider outcome data the final value, but how you get there, that process, is really important to us. How we set goals, are those goals met? Are they met on time? Are they met to the right frequency? Are they looking at the educational components and remembering the content and able to then, you know, regurgitate that or translate that into the activities that they complete? And those activities are, you know, are they completing the exercises to the fullest extent from start to finish? I mean, we have sort of like a personal training app in there.
Yeah.
Really, our exercise right. physiologist and our team builds these workouts personalized to every patient, which is really cool.
Yeah.
But if no one's doing them, or they're not understanding them, or, you know, whatnot, then we're not really seeing that value. And and truly, you might argue, is that clinical data? For us, it is. I mean, we look at
right.
lifestyle health as a clinical component of care, and that it's very important that we focus on that. Now, most of the time, we leave that self-managed to the patient. But in reality, what we found is that we need to have some accountability piece there too. So, you know, attending those health coaching sessions and being active and participatory in those sessions, or the engagements that we send to the patients, are all really very important, you know, aspects of the program. So when we look at, you know, our outcomes, I'll just share some of them. So we have 83% of our patients stay engaged in our solution for 9 or more months, which is an awesome.
Wow.
So the prescription is initially written for the year on a typical basis. So it's not always. The provider gets to decide that, but we recommend it.
Okay.
And then at 16 weeks, which is about 4 month mark, we see an average of 5.4% of total body weight loss.
So wow.
it's above clinical significance, which is great.
Yeah. Even what's clinical significance?
5%.
5%. Wow. Yep. So you're beating it.
Yeah.
That's sweet. Yeah. Keep going with the stats.
Yeah.
The 83% are still engaged after 9 months mm-hmm. Is insane, right? That's an incredible statistic. And I think it's sometimes it's hard, like if you're not in the fitness world, I mean, I used to do competitive powerlifting, so I get it. But there's so many people I used to talk to who would, Dwayne, I want to start, we're going to start working out with you. Oh, okay, sounds good. No one ever lasted 9 months.
Yeah.
Right? Like that is, that's an actual switch in your behavior as a human being mm-hmm. and your routine. I mean, that's impressive that someone's engaging that long. So one, kudos to you guys, but keep going. Was there more stats that I want to interrupt?
No, it's great. Okay. That's great. It's true. It is. And I think you might say why or how. How do you get that? We have a great, you know, clinical team, care coordination team is what we call it. But strip away the fancy title, they're health coaches that are clinicians as well. And they go through, you know, a national training and get a certificate. They mm-hmm. have a lot of in-service training and oversight from our team too. And we build a strong relationship with them, and accountability is a big piece of that, mm-hmm. you know, relationship.
Yeah.
So attending those appointments, being there, you know.
Right.
Appointments being not physical, but, you know, phone call. Every
right.
week, coaching
yeah. call. Yeah, so. Yeah, no, I, it's amazing. So I'm gonna dive into culture in a second here. One of the things kind of rephrasing the clinical question is your feedback loop from your patients, right? So clinical data, whatever you want to call it, either way, it's feedback from your patients or people who are using it, your clinicians, whoever it is. Can you walk through a big concern for a lot of startups is sometimes they'll perceive like a quality system as, well, it's going to slow me down, right? It's going to slow down progress. Clinical feedback, a feedback loop. While they might not see it as that because they know it's important, but it's gonna slow down my commercial launch. It's going to slow down, like, I want to go after all these clients right now, right? Mm-hmm. And so did you, at any point in time, because it sounds like you valued that high right off the get-go. Did you ever sit there and question yourself and go, is this slowing us down? Like, I could go sell this to 20 more people if I turn my attention there. But instead, I'm making sure that I'm getting this feedback loop right and I'm taking in the voice of customer. I mean, I could see how, as a startup, like, you could see where you want to go. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there's this direct path to it, but it's not always the best to just go straight there. You might have to loop around a little bit and do this first. Did you ever feel like that? And if you did, you know, how did you come back to your true north of, I need to focus on this because this is how I'm going to get the best product to go do the next big step?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I would say, actually, I don't know that I did. I think that we're right or wrong or indifferent, right? Because you could argue that as a startup, you probably should focus on the high ground of it. But what was always important is that we have, you know, a smaller number of raving fans than a higher number of mediocre fans.
Yeah.
And I think then what we do is we have them singing, you know, about PrescribeFit from the rooftops, right? And I'll just share this with you. This is the first time we put this out here, because it was just done last week.
But
we have boasts a 71 NPS score from our patients. So, which is really great,
right?
Just right out the gate,
right?
And it was the first time that we calculated it. We sent it out to our patients, and it came in at 71, which is in the excellent category.
Oh yeah,
yeah. So it was really good because it is like touching to hear that. I'm, you know, proud to say that we have that there.
Yeah.
That, you know, we will focus on making sure that's even higher as we continue on.
Yeah.
But it's because we do take the time to make sure that the conversations that our clinicians have with the patients are appropriate, follow our methodologies like motivational interviewing and stages of change. And, you know, they follow all those things that we put into place. And we see that the patients really enjoy, and more than enjoy, but they're seeing the great results, you know, from their time with us.
Yeah.
So it is important to have that feedback loop. We even invite the physician to participate in it too. So that way we're provider, whichever level. So that way, you know, we're all kind of saying the same thing and encouraging the patient to continue, you know, for those 9+ months and keep them going. And you know, we put in systems to make sure we audit, you know, phones and phone calls and correspondences and all those kind of things. And that to me is the most important piece. And now we're working on the scaling piece.
Yeah.
So I won't say that we're not,
but
you know, it's just like,
you took your time getting there and then getting it right. I think it's super important. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about, culture here. So to go from, you know, 7 people and whatever year that necessarily was, right, to 2018, 2019, right, to 40 people current day. Again, no one else can see this, but there's a great office space out here, right? It's really cool, very modern. People are here working, but you have the ability to work from home, that kind of good stuff. So it's you're building a great culture, right? The importance of a great culture as you scale, especially for a startup company, right? So large companies always talk about, well, you know, what if you, I think there's a saying, it's like, what if you spend time training someone for so many years and then they leave? Mm-hmm. And then the next thought bubble is like, well, what if you don't train that person at all, right? And so with a startup company, it is just a little bit, I'm not saying losing someone at a big company's, you know, not like detrimental, but at a startup, especially when you're really small, right? If you lose someone, like that could derail the company for a little bit. It could be harder to recover from that, right? Because as a company, I mean, companies like babies. It's mm-hmm. the same thing, right? So I have a daughter who's almost two, and the first 8 months, it's like, yikes. Like, she is completely, like, I am, if I don't give her enough attention, like, you know, like, you need a lot of TLC for them, right? Yeah. It's the same thing with a startup.
You so are
like,
her world.
Yeah, exactly, right? And so when someone leaves, it hurts. So for you, and we talked about this before, so for those listening in, I'd already kind of asked the question, then I was like, you know what, save it for the podcast, because I want to hear it. But culture is super important. You mentioned that within the first couple minutes of me being here, right? And so as a CEO, we covered fundraising, which falls on your shoulders generally, and the strategic vision of the company falls on your shoulders. Ultimately, you know, you are responsible for that. You have a team, right, and other people are going to support you in there. But then culture also really falls to you, right, to make sure that you're building a good culture. People want to work here, right? It is a startup. So there is a certain level of inherent risk when joining a startup, but the cultures can be a little more flexible, right? And that's an advantage you can have on other people. So walk me through a little bit what culture means to you and how important that was mm-hmm. as you built the company and as you've been in this growth phase.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. So that's great, great question. I'm glad that you saw that right off the bat, yeah. And you're asking.
Yeah.
Because yeah. it is super important. And as we continue to hire too, mm-hmm. we want to make sure that the message is out there for that. I'll start off with it this way. There's two things, first of all, that I just initially will thought of that I want to say. The first is that the most impactful part, I think, of a relationship aren't always with the words that you use, but it's the way you make people feel.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll always leave remembering that over, you know, every specific thing that you say or whatnot.
Yeah.
And that's one of the biggest things we have here is we have, you know, really good core values that we actually evaluate the policies or decisions that we make, and we evaluate, you know, everything that we do based on those core values.
Mm-hmm.
And we use, you know, those core values in a leadership meeting to say, does it meet, you know, those enough of the definition of what we think of as a prescribed fit, you know, supported policy mm-hmm. based upon that. So that's really important for us. And the second piece is we've made everybody in the company owners too, because what I want is for this family of people to come together and say, okay, at the end of the day, we're going to make the best decision for the company, but to get there, we're going to totally support each other in how we do this and make sure that we're making the best decisions that we can. Might always agree. We practice radical honesty. We mm-hmm. really make sure that, you know, we're saying what we feel is right or think is right or know is right. And we go at it that way. And then at the end, we duke it out and go from there. You know,
yeah.
Make a decision. And it's great. We have a really good group of people that are experienced in the industry in orthopedics, and those that have never been in healthcare before but have been a part of startups and high growth startups. We have those that have built, you know, a $300 million company, like a president and COO,
yep.
Jack. We have those that have been a part of a care navigation, care coordination team for, you know, 2 decades and have really worked in their career to do that. And for patients, you know, for of practices or for TPAs or those kind of things of all sorts. So she's got, you know, very wide experience. And it's really good. So we all come at it and we know, you know, the resource, where to go to and who to go to when we're trying to make a decision. And mm-hmm. I think that's really important. And there's a lot of respect that's automatically there.
Yeah.
And we also take the time to do things like, you know, outings or events. You know, every Wednesday we have an all associate virtual gathering, or if you're here in the office and you're obviously part of it physically.
Yeah.
To where, you know, it's 20 minutes and it's sort of like just a watering hole gathering where you come together and we just, you know, talk about whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everybody puts up a fun background on their back, you know, screen.
Right. Yeah.
We do things every month. We have an all associate gathering here. And for those that are remote, we have an area that, you know, has microphones hanging down from the ceiling so they can kind of participate naturally with it.
Yep.
And that's a really important piece, is to make sure that our remote team and our in-person team feel cohesive and
yeah,
together.
Right.
And you know, why? I really look at that as a necessary piece of starting a company. And if you can't have something like that, then maybe think it through more, or you know, evaluate how important that is to you, because it probably will come up as a very, very high priority item at some point.
Right.
Because when you have associates that, you know, are making decisions based upon a paycheck or based upon other things, and they're like, you know what, I just don't feel connected here, so why not leave? Then, you know, you're gonna have bigger problems down the road. And
yeah.
That's not something, you know, we necessarily, being a startup company, we necessarily can't lead the market in salary. We don't lag, we match. We're
yeah.
very good at competitive pay and all those benefits and all that. But I don't really think that that's what keeps people at a company.
It's, right.
It certainly helps.
Yeah.
No doubt. That's yep. why we're here.
Yeah. <You know? laughs> right. Yeah.
But
yeah.
it's not the only piece of it. So
yeah.
You want to be proud of where you work and feel like your work is meaningful. And I will tell you, we have a true passionate, you know, group of people here that believe in what they do. One of the questions that we ask every associate or every candidate that, you know, is evaluated for a job is, you know, how do you live a healthy lifestyle? What do you do? And it's sort of like if you go into the gym and you're seeking out a personal trainer,
mm-hmm.
you know, then are you going to seek out the person that you want to be like, or is right. it going to be someone different? Right. Like, so that we don't want this to be aspirational. We want it to be realistic. We want
yeah.
it to be here. And the associates here do some of them are certified yoga instructors. Some of them are certified meditation, you know, instructors. Some of them have, they love to run, or they don't love to run, but they love to lift. Or
yeah.
they, you know, it's, yeah. there's a whole slew of people that are here, and they work and they live the work that we're doing here. Mm-hmm. So it's really cool.
Yeah, no, that. it's a great culture. It's a great buy-in.
Mm-hmm.
Again, like I said, it's super important to have that buy-in from your employees. Curious on, so you mentioned you made everybody owner. So obviously you have some type of equity pool, mm-hmm. right, for all the employees.
Right.
I think that's great, especially, you know, that was a lot of like the probably millennial generation. I think I could say this because I'm a millennial theoretically. That was a big thing for a lot of millennials, right? Like coming up is like, hey, actually, you know, it'd be nice to own a little bit of what I'm working for, mm-hmm. right? It makes a lot of sense. I think that's another cool feature that a lot of startups can do that some larger companies can't necessarily.
Right.
But to your point on the pay, because I kind of want to touch on this. And again, mm-hmm. I'm not the best example because I've only had 3 jobs before I started Project MedTech. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when I left one of my jobs, the pay was not as good as where I was going. But I could tell you to leave that job was super difficult mm-hmm. because the culture of the company, at least in my experience, was so good.
Mm-hmm.
And to leave the job I took that for, even though it paid really well, super easy.
Yeah.
Because the culture wasn't great, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's so interesting. But I do think sometimes, you know, startups like I can't compete. Mm-hmm. I can't pay what that company pays.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed. But you can supplement with culture and equity.
You can.
Yeah. I think right. that's how you've done.
How you walk into the building every day, how you feel,
right.
is really impactful.
It's a big deal.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. So,
and
anyways.
The equity is important. I mean, it's everyone part time, full time. I mean, they all have it. So
I think that's great
because we want that collective mindset.
Yeah.
Of working hard towards the goal that we need to hit. And,
yeah.
And certainly, you know, that's how you get it.
Like, yeah.
Why shouldn't they have it?
Like, right.
Right. At this point.
Yep. So. I love that. So that's most of the things I had on my list. Is there anything else that I missed that you were like, hey, I want to touch on this before we wrap things up?
Oh, geez.
The answer could be no. I always give this the yeah. option because I found myself sometimes I'd go through my list and then they'd be like, I wanted to cover one more thing and this is super important. And sometimes the thing they want to cover turned out to be like the best part of the episode.
Yeah.
So I wanted to offer that to you real quick.
Yeah, that's a good question. So I think the one thing that, you know, I would just add to this is we you know, are trying to bring about a whole new term
okay.
for what we're doing. And it's kind of fun and it's kind of different and
yeah.
it's not used out there before. There's no trademark. There's nothing for it.
Yeah.
You know, no precedent. Called
right.
orthobesity.
Okay.
So, you know, and that it really is just the combination of two words of ortho and obesity together. And it's a term that we're putting out there and we're promoting. This is just after, you know, a few weeks of kind of working through how we wanted to do this.
Yeah.
And you'll see more of it out there. But
okay.
Yeah, we're kind of putting it out there. And that is, you know, the increasing prevalence of obese individuals presenting with orthopedic issues. And there's so it has a big impact on the industry because the number of people has actually gone up. And I'm very much excited for a study like this to be released in the United States. But you've said some things about overseas, so I feel like this is relevant. In Australia, there was a study that was very recently done that shows that the average age of a knee replacement or a joint replacement patient has dropped. And it has dropped because the prevalence of obesity has gone up. And just as a strong push out there, it is so impactful to really focus on that when, we're really trying to lead the charge in a cure and a treatment for this and making sure that we focus on that because it's a big issue as we continue on in our work.
I mean, no questions asked. And I think the education piece of that is super important. And from the international piece, there's about 40% of our listeners are overseas anyways, and 5% of that's Australia. So
okay, there you go.
Yeah, so they'll appreciate the shout out.
There you go.
But no, I totally agree. I mean, there's so many people who just don't understand. We know how obesity affects diabetes and heart disease and a number of other things, right? But there is that important piece of the ortho piece that I think people know but brush aside. And so anything we could do from an educational piece on that, I think it's super important to understand how that's going to affect them later on, right? So I love it. Awesome. So I will include a hyperlink to your LinkedIn. Are you pretty active on LinkedIn?
I am.
Sweet. Yeah. So I'll include a hyperlink to your LinkedIn if someone wants to reach out. I'll also include a link to the website of PrescribeFit. But Brock, thanks so much for being my first in-person podcast interview and for having me into to your space. It's awesome. Yeah. I love what you're doing. Thanks for telling the story. I think there's a lot people can learn from your story and your kind of pursuit of coming out with a super good product and really, you know, pushing through that kind of 2-year barrier you talked about, right? Of like, shoot, it's not doing what we think, right? So I love the whole story. So thanks so much for doing this.
Yeah, and thank you, Duane. This is great. Glad to have you here in our office and to be the first, honored to be the first in person.
I forgot how easy these were. So this is, not that doing it on video is hard, right? It's just, there is a different level of like connection and interaction. Yeah. Less, there's no distractions, right? It's just me and you sitting across from a table. So I love this. I love promoting other Ohio companies as well. And so if we didn't make that abundantly clear, it's PrescribeFit's here in Columbus, Ohio. And you're an Ohio guy. So anyways, thanks so much for doing this.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe and leave a review. If you need anything from the podcast, you can always contact us at info@projectmedtech.com. Thanks for listening and have a great day.